Off top, pandas spend 10 to 16 hours a day eating. They poop 40 times a day. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. My favorite kind of episode. It's me and my man, Chuck the Snack, in the building. What's up, Charlie?
Not much. How you doing?
Good. I mean, I like guests, but I really don't need them.
This is the thing. Dominique pretends he's antisocial, but then he gets so excited we have a good guest. So excited.
I'm never excited for the guest. I'm excited after the guest.
Yeah.
And we end up, like, I think the fact of the matter is early in the show, we weren't great. And no. So the guests, I felt like, tripped us up because it was like, now I got to balance somebody else in. But now the guests are normally additive. Mm-hmm. I still rather not have them. But when they get here afterwards, I'm like, that was fire.
I was texting Ashley.
Oh, gosh.
About
Ashley's my wife.
Yes. About weird facts about you for L. Duncan's podcast. Oh. And I was like, Ashley will have the best weird facts. And the first one she had was, Dominique has a low social battery. And I was like, yep, spot on, low power mode when it comes to guests.
Ashley can't talk because her social battery dipped this weekend. But
did it?
Yeah. She was tired. And she was like, is this what you feel every time from going out? We had a bunch of things. Like, we had practices, and the girls had a Black Student Union show. And then we had some family events. And then we got home, and she was like, is this how you feel? I feel like an introvert. I was like, yes, this is how I feel all the time. Every time you ask me to do something. We had that party to go to, which.
Are we going
to
talk about this? Guys.
All right. So before we
get into it. We have a new meme. We have a new Dominique Foxworth meme.
Let's set up the show first. We got playoff basketball to talk about, guys. We got some draft stuff with the Commanders and Jaden and Drake May. All that stuff's on the way. But first, let Charlie make fun of me.
We have a new meme. We had the zero goggles Dominique Foxworth.
I love that one.
We now literally have Dominique Foxworth dacking.
All right.
He's out there in a cowboy hat. Ready to go.
All right.
The meme will be there. The template will be there. White t-shirt. You can put whatever you want on the t-shirt.
Yeah, so we don't, I mean, I feel like I was going to give you some space to mock me, but you didn't mock me too hard. Everyone who listened to the show, especially if you listen to Rose and Thorns, knows that my wife's, one of her best friends, had a Cowboy Carter themed birthday party. It was great.
Yeah.
But I found out what I was wearing the day of. Ashley ordered me some stuff on Amazon. And of course, I'm not the social media guy, so I keep my little picture to myself. Ashley can't help herself. So she put up pictures of me in a doofy cowboy hat.
You look good.
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, I look good. I feel like I look really good today. I like
you
this.
You do. It's good. It's a good fit.
I'm feeling real cute. Feeling real cute today. Y'all better watch out.
You know who else was real cute last night? Oh. The panda of the NBA. Nikola Jokic.
Oh, great transition.
Thank you.
He was not cute. He was terrifying.
You texted me the big old bear.
So at the end, I think we'll break down this game a bunch of different ways. But the thing that I hate saying obvious things, however, why do all his clutch shots for the past 4 or 5 years look so unorthodox and always go in? It's like, I believe they're going in, even though I know no one is ever planning to shoot like that. But I guess I have to accept that sometimes he is planning to do an up and under 3-pointer with a hand in his face.
It's crazy. I mean, so he was 15 for 23 in that game, and all 8 of his misses, I was stunned by.
That's true. I'm surprised by it also. But I don't think he was the story of the game. I think, I think everybody else was the story of the game. And I know you're going to make the argument that he makes everyone better, which is absolutely right. But I felt like AD and LeBron were as good as you can expect them to be. Like, of course, they can play better because they're that great. But a reasonable expectation for them is what they gave him yesterday. The problem that everyone obviously saw was D'Angelo Russell. And honestly, it's not just him. It's Reeves. It's everyone around Torian Prince. It's like all the guys around the Lakers stars came up short, especially in comparison to what we saw from the guys around the Nugget stars. And it's ironic and embarrassing, I guess, that KCP was one of the guys, because he used to be a Laker, and he went off for 12 points in the third quarter. And that's really when the game got out of hand. I mean, Michael Porter Jr. put up 19. Mm-hmm. And I think this game felt to me a lot like what the Lakers, the things that the Lakers do to beat other teams aren't going to work mm-hmm. against this team. So they're going to have to find another way to win, because most of the time the Lakers have, like, between Rui, LeBron, and AD, they have like a really athletic and really kind of big front court.
Yeah,
and,
huge.
Yeah, and they bring in Prince and
Jackson Hayes.
That's the guy I was thinking of. The Nuggets are not affected by that because they have taller, athleticer guys, and then they have Jokic.
So you look at this as being very discouraging for the Lakers.
I think I could put a positive spin on it. I think if you're asking me to bet some money, I would obviously pick the Nuggets, just like everyone else yeah. has. I think we looked it up. The ESPN rundown was 16-0. All the experts picked the Nuggets over the Lakers. I think they're right. I think after watching this game, I could concoct an argument that would convince me that the Lakers could be competitive, but I wouldn't bet anything on it. And the argument is that Russell won't play this bad. Reeves will get some more shots. AD, there's no reason to believe that what AD and LeBron did can be stopped. They'll be able to do it again. And these kind of ancillary players, the not even the bench, but the others around them, as Shaq and Chuck call them, they can obviously play better. It's an easy thing to push back against, but I think if I'm trying to argue against, if I'm trying to argue for the Lakers, that's where I'll end up.
And historically, role players play better at home. Right. They're in Denver, which is a really hard place to play. Like, LeBron hasn't won in Denver in four calendar years. I know that's been said on every single podcast and TV show for a while, but there was a part of me that was encouraged by it. And I'm not just doing this to play devil's advocate, but the best, like, their best punch, LeBron and Davis's best punch, was really effective in the first half when LA was running more offense. In the second half of that game, they ran fewer organized sets on offense than any of the other playoffs teams did in the first 2 days of the postseason. Wow. So there is a way for them to be better organized and more effective in the second half of games. Fatigue was certainly a factor. Like, we saw that play where they had like three missed offensive rebounds, and then Jokic or Davis and LeBron didn't move, and Jokic beat everyone down the floor and dunked the ball, or attempted to dunk the ball, and sort of threw it at the rim and scooted it over. But no, there's the thing that I took away from that game. The story for me was not about the Lakers others. It was about the Nuggets two-man game. Yeah. And it's becoming that level of effectiveness where we talked about this after the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is inevitable.
Yeah.
Nikola Jokic, and really it's Nikola Jokic and Murray, who play so well off of him, even though he didn't have a great game one. They're inevitable. They were down 12. It took like 2 minutes in the second quarter. It's a tie ball game going into half. And at halftime, I know Wilbon said this on the broadcast, that it felt like they were losing because they should have been up by 15 to 18 points, and they ended up only being up three because of a LeBron James bomb. And that action is so unstoppable. It's really exciting to see how it's going to be effective against all these awesome teams in the West.
So I got a couple of things I want to respond to. First, the organized plays thing in the second half for the Lakers is not a stat that I was aware of. It makes sense, but do you not think that's just a function of the fact that the organized plays they were running stopped working, and you only have so many? It's like they understand and make adjustments. This is a smart team that's core is essentially the same. Played mm-hmm. them last year. You don't think that, and this is kind of what it comes down to a lot of NBA games. In the fourth quarter, we're going to do ISO or we're going to do high pick and roll, because the plays, the design plays, unless it's like a 5 seconds left, it's going to come down to these type of, like, I mean, it's not street ball, obviously, but these more fluid offensive possessions, not these design plays to get great shots. So, like, mm-hmm. I don't know that I think that that's a reasonable adjustment to expect, is like run more design stuff deeper into the game.
Well, all these teams have, like, even if they're same, like, similar sets, like, that's what the Nuggets can lean on, is they have this designed offense that's able to create mismatches. And LA didn't know what to do. They blitzed a ton of those pick and rolls and doubled and tried to force the ball out of their hands. And it's like, Jokic is someone who makes the right play 100% of the time. That's the crazy thing about it. Like, they had the Nuggets had two turnovers in that game. But here's the exact numbers. First quarter, the Lakers ran 67% of their offensive possessions were organized sets. Second quarter, 55, still very good. Quarter three, 45. Quarter four, 39. So they sort of, in panic mode, got disorganized, and that didn't help.
Yeah. Okay. So the Nuggets offense and the pick and roll you're talking about, I think you're right. Pick and roll feels inevitable. There's something about Jokic, where I haven't quite figured out the right metaphor, but he just kind of oozes into the spaces that you have left available, and not physical spaces, but the places where his team needs him. And that's just him making the right decisions, but it feels so fluid that, like, I feel like I need a better metaphor than him just being the quarterback.
Yeah.
Because it happens without you noticing it almost until you, like, go back and rewatch the game, like both of us did this morning. And it's like, oh, yeah, they did that, so he did this, and they did that, so then he did this. And there's always an answer, and it always looks effortless.
Yeah.
The other thing that popped out to me is, like, the emotion around basketball. We often get caught up in it, and as right now, the Clippers are way ahead on the Mavs. And I was thinking about this in relation to the Nuggets also, and the Mavs and the Clippers, is, like, we buy so much into, like, what we feel like is the trend that a team is on headed into the playoffs. Because everyone told me the Mavs are hot and the Clippers are swooning at this point.
Yeah.
And their defense isn't the same, blah, blah, blah. And Kawhi's not going to play. He's hurt. We saw a different thing happen on the court. And we had the same kind of narrative surrounding the Nuggets and the way that they fell apart against the Spurs. And they were kind of not limping into the playoffs, but kind of sleepwalking into the playoffs, not getting the number one seed when it was there in front of them. And then we show up, we see them start off not great, but then at no point in that game was I watching this thinking the Nuggets weren't going to win.
Yeah.
No matter how big the lead
inevitable.
Got, I was like, yeah.
Inevitable.
He does feel inevitable in a different way, though, but inevitable nonetheless.
It's currently, we're taping this, it's halftime of the Clippers-Mavs game. The Clippers are up 56-30.
All right, safe to say that one's over.
Yeah, you would assume. So, did you see that Shaq picked the Lakers ahead of this series?
That's nonsense.
Do you think it's because he's sort of afraid of his historic spot with Jokic?
I want to say no, but that seems like a very Shaq reaction. Not that I know him personally, but his public persona does seem like one that would be offended by that. But, I mean, he's also a Laker. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his history is in picking against or for the Lakers, but it's reasonable that he's
levied some strong criticisms against Anthony Davis in the past.
I remember those. The criticism of Anthony Davis seemed like someone who was a Lakers fan and a Lakers family member is like, this is how we feel. Picking your team is a whole different story. But anyway, I don't know that that matters, but Jokic is coming for his spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think some people would argue that he's already passed him. Like, you sent me that tweet from George Karl where he's saying that Jokic is already the best player of all time.
Yeah, ahead of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael, and LeBron.
Yeah, George Karl just...
He's got to take a nap. He's gotten so into his Carmelo bashing that he now just... Take a beat. Michael was pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
All right, Jokic wins another championship. I mean, is that what we're talking about? Like, what it's going to take for him to pass Shaq?
Yeah, I mean, Shaq was, it's so hard because, I mean, first of all, I would love to watch them play against each other. Yeah. It would be awesome.
I don't even know how to like, handicap that. Like, it's hard to imagine because their styles are so different. It's hard to imagine who would have the advantage. It feels like neither would be able to stop the other.
And it's just like, I think we've gotten so far away from those early Lakers teams. And, you know, the idolatry of Kobe Bryant has made it seem like it was much more of a two-man partnership. And those early three-ring Lakers teams, like, Shaq, you could just get on his back and win a title in a way that was, like, pretty unique. So I don't really have a take on that. I got another question, though.
All right.
Do you think the Lakers should have tanked the play-in game to try and play the Thunder in the first round?
I mean, I guess you could say that it would be worth the risk, but they aren't good enough to – because if they were to tank the play-in game, that means they put themselves in a single elimination game. We just watched the Warriors get bumped out and not even allowed into the playoffs. I don't think the Lakers are good enough to play around like that.
What does that say about 39-year-old LeBron and prime Anthony Davis? You don't trust them in a one-game elimination game against the Kings.
Yeah, it says that what we're watching is real. And I mean, I think that it's – I don't think it's them, honestly. And I guess you could say that a prime LeBron, it wouldn't matter who's around him, maybe. AD's never been that guy. He's never been that good. But I do think if you get – we got a great game from D'Lo in the play-in game, and they beat the Pelicans. If you would have got a good game
– hamstring injury from Zion. Also.
Yeah, but I mean, either way.
It's the Zion experience.
Yeah, I think – I guess my point is those guys aren't reliable.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not saying that AD and LeBron wouldn't have showed up. I think they would have showed up. but I can't guarantee you that you're going to get a good game from the rest of those guys, which it feels kind of like, even though Murray had a not great game, it feels a lot like the guys that the Nuggets have. They're not deep either, but the guys that the Nuggets have that play, they feel a lot more reliable and consistent than the Lakers guys.
And the crazy thing is that that's what LeBron used to do. There's the Larry Bird quote that was like, when the Pacers wanted to trade for J.J. Hickson, he was like, I'm not taking any of those bleeping guys. Them guys play with LeBron James and look a whole lot better. That's what I think about the Nuggets thing. I actually don't think the supporting cast are that different.
Yeah.
Like, I know that we disagree. Like, yeah. Aaron Gordon was not this when he was on Orlando. And I know it was like he couldn't shoot the ball. But I don't think...
So you think that I am the GM that's not Larry Bird, where I'm being tricked into thinking that these supporting guys are better than they actually are, but they're actually just benefiting from the attention that Jokic is getting, the open shots that he's getting, the offense that he's creating.
Yeah, it's not just like the attention. It's the way that he runs an offense and gets everyone the ball in like their best spot. Like KCP was like, we mocked Rob Pelinka when he signed him and said that the signing was manna from heaven. And of course he was incredible in their bubble run, but he's a completely different level player now that he's on the Nuggets. Michael Porter Jr. is someone who's had a ton of back injuries and has become sort of a floor spacing specialist. The kid zero assists again, but like he looks great playing with Jokic. Yeah. You know, all these guys are elevated because of that. And I don't think that those guys in a vacuum are definitively like that much better than Reeves or Russell or Rui. Like all those guys would look great playing with Jokic. To me, this is like, and I can't believe I'm going to say this because I'm not trying to blaspheme the Spurs dynasty, but there's like a souped up version of this where these laid back superstars who only care about winning. And what that does is it lifts up all of these okay role players where they can fit perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue against, but I because you're arguing that I'm not seeing the truest version of these players.
It's just like the continuity and the fit makes them better and like makes them.
But okay. So yeah. I guess my question is, do you think, if we flipped everybody but the two stars on both teams, you think the outcome would be no different?
I do think that at this point, yeah, a Jokic and Murray team with, if you gave them Rui, Reeves, and Russell, yeah, I think they'd be fine. That's my opinion. I mean, the part of it, though, is like...
I find that hard to believe, but maybe you might be right. I'm trying my best to be level-headed in this conversation because I don't know basketball as well as I know football, but I know that I've watched both of these teams play a lot, and the consistency that you get from the Nuggets players is not even close. And I guess you could argue that's because they get better opportunities, better shots, and they have a better star in Jokic. I can't push back on any of that, but I do think this is where I would disagree with you. The athleticism, and I know Michael Porter Jr. is back or whatever, but Aaron Gordon is something
great athlete,
something different.
Yeah,
like you don't have one of those on the Lakers.
And he couldn't play with Davis and LeBron at the same time
because he can't shoot.
Yeah, 29%.
But I mean, LeBron's shooting over 40%. Davis can shoot. I think that they would find a way to put him in a position where he'd be fine. I think. Yeah, I mean, I guess the pushback is there are players who would have a tougher fit with the Lakers than there are no players that would have a bad fit with Jokic, right?
We know KCP would be great on the Lakers. We saw that in the bubble run.
Yeah, we did see that.
And obviously Porter Jr. is like the type of player, like LeBron used to run those awesome pet actions with Kyle Korver and Kevin Love where they would have to, the defenders have to make a choice and one of them would get an open three. Obviously those guys would fit, but I just think Jokic is playing it such, like, in my, like, basketball sentient life, like Jokic is careening up the rankings of the best players I've ever seen.
Can
like
you careen up?
He can careen up. If anyone can careen up, every time he runs, it looks like he's careening. But like, I mean, seriously, this stuff is like really, really, really rare. And like, I'm sure Wembanyama will get there one day. But like, this is like LeBron, Curry, Jokic have sort of levitated above the rest of the players I can really remember seeing from like a skills and dominance perspective since Shaq. It's really cool. But we can move on. Do we want to talk about Anthony Edwards? How cool it was?
We have to.
What are we seeing from this
guy? I mean, it feels like I was kind of racking my brain earlier for first round moments for individuals. Because we always talk about how in the NBA, the playoffs is when guys take a step up in our mind. And we've seen it in recent years from, I guess, Jason Tatum is a guy and Ja Morant at certain points. And obviously Jokic. But you have to do it in the playoffs. And it's normally like one game or one series or one moment. And I had a hard time remembering outside of Jordan 63 and a loss against the Celtics. I had a hard time remembering first round moments like this. And Ant-Man went for, what, 33? So it wasn't even a big number.
It was loud.
But it was loud. And he was talking to KD. It was so much fun. It was so likable and so intense and so unlike the stars that we're used to, because there's something about Ant that feels, and maybe it's his background and it's his personality, because if you guys don't know it, like, his mom and grandma were raising him. They died when he was young. And I think that, like, engenders some love and support from everyone else. And his brother and sister raised him. And we read the stories about him not loving basketball, being a real football guy, and then kind of backing into being a basketball superstar. And then it's his interviews, his personality. It all feels fun to some degree. But there was something about this moment that I know you want me to be, like, pissed off because he was doing it to my man KD.
No.
But it was so likable and lovable and clutch and fun. It's like even KD was smiling at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after the game, he also said, everyone knows this, I've said this in interviews before, KD's my favorite player of all time. I mean, like, look, as much as I jokingly on KD with you, like, obviously when you go at one of the best players of all time who's also having a great game and you outplay him, that's very cool from a young player. My take on it, why I think it's so cool, the team he's lifting, although very good, this is Karl Towns, who we have mocked relentlessly for not being able to play in the playoffs. This is Rudy Gobert, who is one of your hobby horses, being like, he cannot play defense. He can't be on the floor in the playoffs. And Ant's like, I don't care. Yeah. We're doing this. We're going through everyone.
Somebody dug up an old clip of him saying that he had 2 7-foot sons. And I was like, yeah, this feels appropriate. He has 2 7-foot sons and Rudy and Kat. But I thought Rudy was great, man.
He was. He was awesome.
Yeah, like, he got trapped in perimeter, and I guess maybe this is some Rudy being great and Devin Booker being the opposite of it, but he got trapped in perimeter situations with Devin Booker, and that's, like, the knock against Rudy Gobert. It's like his offensive game isn't enough to compensate for the fact that he can sometimes get isolated and can't move laterally on defense. And, like, the value isn't always there. And we've had people come on this show and kind of push back on that, I think, in smart ways. We had Russillo do it. We had Wozni do it. And it made me rethink the value of Gobert in these series. But I don't need to in this particular series because he was great. And they didn't need him on offense because – in part because in the clutch moments, Ant did what you expect a big-time wing to do. To get on my back. And, like, you were talking about the Lakers not running as many sets. You don't need to run no damn sets when I can't miss. Like, that's all you have to do. Rudy does not have to worry about people sagging off of him or getting extra defense pulled away to help other defenders because he can't do anything offensively. Because you know what? Ant is going to score. And on the other end of the floor, Rudy's impact is, like, I mean, it's, I was gonna say legendary, that's the wrong word, it's prolific, historic, like the amount of impact that he has on defense. So if they can find a way to continue to score offensively with him on the floor, this team is one that could be a problem for the Nuggets in the future.
Future, that team was a problem. Yeah, I mean, that was the story after last year's postseason that the Timberwolves gave him the hardest series. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really fun. Obviously, Devin Booker's not going to be that bad for the rest of the series. That guy's been a killer in the postseason, and he's awesome. And an uncharacteristic bad game on the road happens for all players that aren't LeBron, except for in 2011.
Yeah, that's what's popping into my head is, like, I want to give Jamal Murray some grace. I want to give...
He wasn't that bad.
I know, but I mean, I want to give Devin Booker some grace, but there is a level that I feel like we've gotten accustomed, and they aren't on that level. I guess this is what it boils down to, is there's a level of star where it's like, you know what? They never have bad games. Like, they may not have their top level game, but they never have bad games. But those guys aren't that level of star, so I guess I can't expect that from them.
They're very good.
They're very good. Devin Booker was great last year in the playoffs.
Here's a question.
Stretches.
If you're coaching the Suns, they took 28 threes in that game. I know the Wolves only took 32, but, like, they are a mid-range jump shooting team, but they have three of the best shooters on earth. It has been people have talked about this all year. If you're coaching that team, if you're Frank Vogel, can't you just tell them, take 50 threes a night and let's see what happens? I know it's like throwing out how your team has played and what their comfort zone is, but at a certain point, don't you want to just bend the math?
Okay, so I think that that's not something you can do now. Like, that's something that you have to practice and play. Like, I assume... So
why not?
The offense is the offense. If they aren't... So I guess now I'll have to rewatch this game to see... Because my thought is KD, Booker, and Beal aren't passing up open threes. The offense is not designed to create those shots. Like, the offense is designed at its... I wouldn't say at its best, but when I think of the Suns' offense, I think of isolation mid-range work from Devin Booker, or probably more KD than Devin Booker. If that is where KD, who is, what, 36 now?
Yeah.
If that is where he is comfortable, I mean, I know he can play elsewhere. I guess I don't know how to – you have to design a different offense that creates these opportunities.
Yeah.
You can't just go out there and say, go shoot more threes, because I don't remember them passing up wide-open threes.
Definitely. But if a couple things. If that's indeed the case, this team will never be threatening,
yeah.
Which is a team that's designed to win championships. Right. And second of all, like, you have Grayson Allen, who led the NBA in three-point percentage. Bradley Beal was and I know it's been up and down, and people always say the jump shot looks better than it is. He has been a 40% three-point shooter of points in his career. Durant is 40% every single year. Booker is an elite shooter. Take a step back, guys. Just take more.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not how they create their shots. Like, Devin Booker is Kobe's system, like the prototype Kobe. I guess maybe Jason Tatum is more prototype. But Jason Tatum shoots a lot of damn threes. But when I think of Devin Booker's style, I think of him emulating Kobe in the high post. And when I think of Kevin Durant, I think of him with his face to the basket, facing up against somebody in that same area. I mean, I don't think of Bradley Beal that often. So I do think of him more as a catch and shoot, open three-point shooter, catch and shoot player. But I think that's the problem. And it's too late now. I know I heard people saying in preparation for the Knicks versus 76ers that the Knicks need to work on their zone because we saw how much trouble the 76ers were having with it from Miami. It's too late. If you don't have a zone by now, it's too late. And I feel the same way about this Suns offense. If they don't have an offense that is designed around penetrate and kick or post up and kick, like, if that's not their offense, then it's too late to put it in.
I mean, the two iconic shots of Durant's career are pull-up threes on the break.
So that's what you want. No offense. Just come down and pull up and launch.
I mean, just run a pick and roll with Booker and Durant and get Beal in the corner or Grayson Allen. Like, I mean, these guys are awesome.
I'm sorry. I said a lot of words, and now I feel like it's really very stupid, and you're right. It's not that hard. Hey, you two shooters, stand in the corner. You other two shooters, run a pick and roll or pick and pop. Or yeah, you're right.
I just mean, like, and also it's just like, Vogel's been a good coach. He, like, they, I know they know this and have talked about this. And if they somehow get through this series, which I think it's, the series is still going to be a war. This game's not going to define that this is going to be a sweep for the Timberwolves or anything. But, like, if they have to play the Nuggets in the next round, they damn well better start shooting threes. They better, like, move the math and move Jokic out of the paint and stuff like that. Like, why not?
It's interesting because this reminds me a little bit of, we didn't even get into LeBron as GM, because I was fully prepared to defend LeBron, the GM, and blame it all on Rob Pelinka. But I wonder, because the power dynamics are such in the NBA that are very different from other sports, especially when you have guys who are 35, 36, 37 years old, who are as old as some coaches in this league, who are still the best player on their team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, coaching that is probably pretty challenging, or at least I wouldn't say coaching is challenging, because those guys are really good and they understand basketball. They have huge basketball IQs. However, if you are looking to make some sort of dramatic change, I don't know how you implement it, because walking in and saying, hey, the way that we've been doing it, the way that you want to do it is wrong. We're going to do it this way. It's not going to work. You have to at some point get their buy-in. And that seems like should be pretty easy, but it seems like it could be more fraught than anticipated. Because I think a lot of times we think about just change this, just change that. We don't take into account the, like, soft stuff that goes into working with people in general, but these special, unique, greatest of all time, finals MVP level 35, 40-year-old guys. Like, that's got to be impossible to feel like, all right, we're going to change everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just take a step back. It's pretty basic. I mean, also, by the way, fun.
You're undercutting all my good points with your sound reasoning. Is that how that's how you manage me as a co-host and executive producer?
Just take a step back.
Yeah, it's like you don't actually try to win me over. Just ignore my ideas and say, take a step back. Shoot.
Sometimes I just don't respond to the bad ideas.
I've noticed that. It's all right. Which I know that's how we communicate. I was like, oh, that means Charlie thinks that's
I had a, yeah.
Oh, well, I guess we can't do feelings with Steve Smith this week.
I would, you know, feelings with Steve Smith is going to happen again. Frank Vogel was on Highly Questionable when I was producing. He was a guest once, and he, or an interview guest. He was a walk-on at Kentucky, and he beat Antoine Walker in one-on-one.
No, he didn't. That's a lie.
He said Antoine Walker was just sitting there trying to take fours, take 30-footers.
That's a lie. I refuse to accept Frank Vogel out here lying. Is that pre-championship?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was when he was with the Pacers coach.
Yeah, that's before he won a championship and he had something to hang his hat on. He was making up stories from college.
He's just beating Antoine. I mean, of all the erratic people that you could, who's a great basketball player, that you could beat in one-on-one because of something like that, Antoine Walker has to be near the top of the list.
Great jiggler, Antoine Walker.
Yeah, all-time jiggler. I mean, that was like that high school kid who almost beat John Wall in one-on-one by just daring him to shoot. Wall was livid and then started dunking on him.
I remember that one. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Some draft.
All right, draft time. Are we talking draft though?
Well, I'm the alpha here, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the alpha test. My Commanders.
Yeah.
My beloved Commandos. They took 20 prospects to go play Topgolf, and Jaden Daniels got his panties in a bunch about it, and his agent started tweeting it. Mike Florio about how this is bad form, and then he hired a PR firm to say that they've worked things out with the Commanders. I know I'm the alpha here, but I'm gonna ask you, is this a big deal at all? Does this matter?
So does what matter, I guess? Where do we start? There's so many places to start. Does Jaden Daniels being upset about it or his agent
all
tweeting about it? Yeah, I'm taking it one by one. Does that matter? Absolutely not. That doesn't matter. I also don't believe in this alpha test business. And I've never run a team, and I know that Kyle Shanahan and Bill Belichick have, like, co-signed this practice of bringing in 20 players at one time. I don't know that they've co-signed this alpha test, but they understand this practice. I went on a couple of pre-draft visits, and I was not a first-round pick. I went in the third round. I was not projected high. I came by myself. There were no other players there. I showed up. I did some interviews, went through some physicals, and that was it. So I'd never heard of this before, and I know that maybe teams do it. The idea that we are less than a week from the draft.
Spoken like a true beta, but continue.
Whatever. I was an alpha. They only brought me in by myself. I remember clearly my Nashville visit where I met with the team psychiatrist, and he told me that I was the best visit he's ever had. And then they went on to draft Pac-Man Jones in the first round to play cornerback. I was like, oh, guess you were not looking for me, because if that was the person that you drafted. But anyway, I just find it hard to believe that Peters and all the new people in at Washington don't know who they're going to select, and that they have brought all these guys. Just for people who don't understand, like, the concept of this bringing in 20 guys alpha test sort of thing is, we're going to put all these guys together, and the guy who kind of emerges as like the centerpiece of this and like the leader and the one who it was like connecting everybody, that tells you something about their personality and them as a leader. And that is going to help you select who you think is the right person for the team. I think it's unlikely that they're unsure who they were going to draft, and they brought these guys in because this was going to be the deciding factor, like something so random and arbitrary as how they interact interpersonally on one strange, like abnormal day. I can't, like, these people seem like smart people. I don't think that this is how they're going to go about doing this. I could be wrong, but that seems silly. I think what's more likely is they wanted to get all the guys in town to make sure that nobody went and did anything dumb. Like, nobody is strung out on drugs and lost 20 pounds. Nobody has, like, gotten face tattoos or done something that would question why you're drafting them. I think it's just, let's get another look, make sure everybody's alive and everybody's okay and everyone's all right. We don't find out anything crazy. No one does anything weird. Like, I think that's, you had the right under the CBA to have these visits, so you're going to have these visits, right? Like, that makes sense.
No. Oh, I don't think there was any, like, grand, that much thought put into it. My conspiracy brain did have a couple things.
Okay.
Which was the first one, which I think might be more logical, which is that a lot of this, like, my first thought is Adam Peters kept things pretty close to the vest. I don't know why, because it's really the first pick in the draft. You know, Caleb's off the board. Like, they're going to get their choice.
There was a memo a few years ago that came from the league office that went out to all the front offices about, like, leaking your picks, maintaining the suspense of the draft. So,
yeah,
maybe that's in his mind. He doesn't want to piss off Roger. Roger, great commercial, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a great commercial.
It's shocking with M&M.
It's so funny. It's, yeah.
But
making jokes, essentially.
Yeah.
Way to go, Raj.
The D. but my first thought was that Jaden Daniels thought he was number two and is more or less gotten wind that it might have been Drake May the whole time. And this was sort of frustration. And I think that's a potentially logical one, because there's been a pretty big gap between what the media thinks of the number two prospect and what a lot of what we've heard from rumors about who's actually going to do the pick. Because I think the vast majority of draft analysts still have Drake May as the number two prospect. Right. Orlovsky, Chris Sims excluded, some of the bigger voices. But the other one, Jaden Daniels took a visit with the Vikings.
Yeah,
you have to love this, because the best thing for Jaden Daniels' career would be him forcing his way not to be the number two pick, the Vikings trading up to number three and drafting him. Because we talk about Caleb having an incredible situation going into Chicago. Kevin O'Connell, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Hawkinson coming back midseason, and an above average offensive line. That would be incredible for a quarterback's development.
Yeah, it would be magnificent. Mm-hmm. If there's any way to make that happen, and you know how I feel about the draft in general. If you don't know, like, I think that it's a pretty way to go about someone's career, is a random kind of selection. You go somewhere, and I think these guys are uniquely talented. And I've said this ad nauseum on this platform and many others, is I do think that the situation is more important than the player. I think a lot of quarterbacks specifically, I think a lot of quarterbacks are talented enough to succeed and they end up in bad situations. Yeah. And so every year, I don't think we did it much this year, but just about every year there's a top quarterback prospect. The conversation, and I pedal it as hard as anyone, the conversation goes, should they force their way to another situation? Because normally whoever is picking at that spot is terrible. And I sincerely believe that different quarterbacks would have different outcomes if they were in better situations. So I would never begrudge a player, and I would advise any player to use any leverage that they had to get to a better situation, because in the long run, we are going to forget it. Eli Manning, John Elway, we are going to forget it if you have success. So whatever.
And he would have success immediately. Yeah. He'd be good rookie year immediately in that situation.
And especially if you believe what I believe, which is all of these quarterbacks, top three, are good enough to play in this league long term, good enough to be good in this league. The difference in who gets to become the great one is probably slightly talent and mostly things out of their control, like how good your offensive line is, how smart your offensive coordinator is, how talented your receivers are, how good your defense is. And I think that aside from the defense, everything else in Minnesota is much better. So whatever Jaden did on his visit, he should have sabotaged it, and he yeah. should call New England and call WEEI, their radio station, call yeah. in and on the whole Northeast in order to get himself to Minnesota as quickly as possible.
The third thing is, I'm wondering if I've seen videos of Drake May's golf swing.
Oh.
It's awesome.
Okay.
You think he just went to Topgolf and he's just hitting nukes? He's hitting it off the back net, and Jaden Daniels gets up there, hits a tops a couple, shanks a couple off the side, netting to the right, and he's like, this team. Looking over at Drake May being like, that guy dominated the alpha test. Look at that tempo. Taking him to tempo town.
I'm sure. They should have played pickleball. Are you a pickleballer?
Oh, yeah. I played some pickleball today.
How'd you do?
Oh. The hands are great.
Okay.
I was pickling. I was dinking. I was hitting overheads. I have a great overhead.
We've never played together. I've played pickleball before, but we need to do some doubles, a team yeah. building activity. We need to challenge another podcast to some pickleball.
Any podcast can come get these pickleball hands.
Except for any pickleball podcast.
Yeah, any football podcast can get these pickleball hands. Have I told you about, so we have two producers, Kevin and Brian, the pickleball gate?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So producers Kevin and Brian, they're both good athletes. They're like great pickup basketball players. Kevin's great at golf. Brian's pretty good at everything. We had a ping pong table in our old office, and it became like a competition, and it was a mini ping pong table, and Kevin was the best player because he only could hit forehands on that table. And so we were going to a ping pong bar because everyone was so annoyed getting dominated by Kevin.
Baby table.
Yeah. And obviously on a big table, you'd have to backhands. Kevin didn't show up because he said he benched too much and injured his neck. He was like, I benched too heavy. I hurt my neck. I can't play ping pong.
Man.
So it became a huge bit. We were, you know, basically treating him like Bobby Petrino in the neck brace. Fast forward about a year, pickleball becomes in vogue. We're all going to play pickleball. Kevin shows up at the court, takes one swing in warmups, and he's like, my back, I'm out.
I don't know what you're implying, my man Kevin. It was a genuine injury. Sometimes you get a little pickle tear.
Yeah, he then hit a drop shot and has been talking about it for the last 3 years about how he hit the greatest drop shot in pickleball history.
Speaking of back pains, did you see at the end of the Heat Celtics game where Caleb Martin kind of undercut Jason Tatum? Oh, you didn't see that? Okay.
No, I had it way off by the end of that game.
Yeah, I know you turned off, but the social medias, bring it up. Watch it. I got to get your opinion on it because I am normally hesitant to...
He broke the code?
I'm normally hesitant to call people out for stuff like this, but you watch it a couple times and it looks like...
Oh, I'm watching it now. Yeah, it's a... play.
It looks bad.
That's a total...
During the score, and it doesn't even look like he's going after the ball. And yeah, I don't think... That is part of Heat culture, or is it?
Kind of is.
I don't know. Ask Cortez.
I mean, if he did that against the Nuggets, you know what Jokic would do. He'd come back and hip check Caleb Martin and end his career.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Did the twin ever come back?
No.
He's still out of the league.
He's gone. Oh. That was it. His last moment was one dirty move against Jokic, and Jokic vigilante justicing the situation.
Oh, big Gru. Anyway, all right. Good show.
Yeah.
I liked it. Had a good time.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Charlie. Kevin's not gonna forgive you for putting him on blast.
Hold on, I just got G-chatted what Joe Mazzulla's reaction was to that play.
Oh, really? What did he say?
I was waiting to see what he was gonna do. I was kind of excited about the whole situation. I enjoyed watching it. Joe Mazzulla's a sicko.
He's so weird. I don't get it. I feel like the Celtics group chat has a lot of Joe Mazzulla slander in it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, hope he's fine. I mean, he seemed like he was fine. He did a post-game interview. He was good. That series, nothing to talk about there. That one will be over quickly, I think.
Kendrick Perkins had the best quote about it. The Heat could shoot 100% from the field and 100% from three, and they're still getting swept.
I guess that's mathematically possible. A lot of turnovers. It had to be a lot of turnovers. They're 100% from the field, 100% from three. A lot of turnovers. Anyway, all right, Charlie, that was fun. Good times. I'll be at the draft next week. I'll miss you. I think my only show will do that draft show with Phil Yates, so we'll put that on this feed too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Mina will be there, too.
Yeah.
I begged for her to join. She joined, and I said it'll be so much more fun because she's smart and funny and great. All right. Next stop for me, the D, Detroit. All right, Charlie. It's been fun. Thank you. Thanks, Kevin and Brian, Serafina, Megan, Podville. I love you. This is beautiful. This is great. Cortez, sorry about the heat. We out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.